Welcome to Heritage Radio Network on Tour, broadcasting live from Feast Portland. I'm Michelle Batista from the Knightwood Society, and before we kick things off, we'd like to thank Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. Right now, I'm joined by Jill Keeler. Jill is the co-founder, the founder of Freeland Spirits. And for those of you who may or may not know, Freeland Spirits is a woman-owned, woman-run distillery here in Portland, Oregon. She funded an Indiegogo campaign, I can't remember how many months ago now, but it was gangbusters. It was amazing. We all watched on the edge of our seats. And she's been rocking and rolling ever since. They just launched their space, which opened up in Northwest Portland. And I gotta say, Jill, it's quite beautiful.
Thank you.
We did our staff party for Knightwood there a couple of weeks ago and blown away. That's still the copper. I mean, it's
She's
incredible.
Beautiful.
She is beautiful. Does she have a name?
There's different theories going around. I'm glad I got permission ahead of time to throw out some F-bombs, but
yeah.
One option. I'm from Texas, and my whole family's a fan of Lonesome Dove, and there's a horse named Hellbitch. So.
So she's called Hellbitch?
You know, among some.
What are some other names that people
Meemaw. Meemaw, so
That's
Freeland.
Your grandmother, right? Let's
right,
talk about
right.
that.
Freeland
Let's...
Spirits is named after my grandma, Freeland. Meemaw never touched a drop of booze in her life and now has a distillery named after her. But I grew up in her garden and just really, she taught me all good things come from scratch and women can be anyone they want to be.
Is she still alive?
No, she's not.
Oh, when did you lose her?
It was, let's see, almost 15 years ago. She was, I remember going to her 90th birthday party and she was starting to, you know, dementia was really setting in and she was like, do you know how old you are? 90. 90! Like, just total shock. So.
Was she single when she
Yes,
passed?
Yes.
She sounds like a spitfire.
Indeed.
I know where you get it from now. Jill and I are friends first, but I feel like we've been living a little bit of parallel lives over the last couple of years. We don't see each other that much because we've both been busy building and launching like-minded businesses, raising money, building amazing communities of women. These are all my favorite things, but also no small tasks. So we sort of hear of each other in the ether and follow along, but I don't get to have her in my presence as often as I would like. But let's start from the beginning, Jill. So you were in your previous life before getting into the spirits game. You were the executive director of Zenger Farm. For anybody that lives on this side of the world, Zenger Farm holds a special place in all of our hearts. It's an urban farm that focuses on community education, sustainable food systems, community, among other things. I think you did that for about 6 years, yeah?
Yep.
And then how did you transition from farming, essentially, to spirits?
It seems very obvious to me, but
I can't wait to hear.
Farming is just really in my DNA. It's generations of my family. And while I was at the farm, which was like the dreamiest job ever, often my friend Corey Carmen, who's a rancher in Wallowa County in eastern Oregon, would, whenever she would come to town, we'd drink whiskey together. And Corey was one of the first people I said, I think I want to start making this. And she's like, great, I'll grow the grain for you. And that's when it really, the idea really took hold and wouldn't let go, is really thinking of spirits as an agricultural product. And not only that, but a part of regenerative agriculture, of thinking of, you know, a huge part of regenerative agriculture are cover crops. And to think of like a winter rye, for example, as something that, you know, not only fixes nitrogen in the soil and, you know, actually builds soil instead of sucking nutrients out of it, to think of a cover crop that could turn into like what I would consider the most beautiful product in the world of rye whiskey. And it's just like a really beautiful concept of something that is good for the soil and a delicious outcome as well.
But you started with gin.
But we started with gin, as you're well aware, whiskey needs aging.
Yes.
And gin is so interesting. When I found Molly, my my magical unicorn. We got really excited about gin and all the unique things we could do with it. And you know, one of our very first meetings, we were on a walk in Forest Park here, and in a very hushed tone, Molly said, "Have you heard of the RotoVap?" Of course, I hadn't, and it's a form of vacuum distillation. And we were thinking of what would Meemaw's gin taste like if it, you know,
if
it
she drank gin.
If she drank gin, it would need to be fresh. It would need to be like what would come right out of Meemaw's garden. And so the only way to use fresh ingredients is really with a vacuum still, because they would die during traditional heat distillation. So this vacuum essentially allows us to distill at a lower temperature. So cucumber, mint, rosemary, thyme, and a secret ingredient are done through the vacuum still, while 14 other botanicals are done through traditional heat distillation. So what has come out is a gin that we could not be more happy with. And it's delicious, and I feel like really represents our distillery and our values.
Yeah, as a person that drinks a lot of your gin and serves a lot of your gin, I think the thing for me when, and I'm very sensory oriented, so very flavor oriented, when Freeland gin hits my palate, the first thing that comes to mind is very feminine.
I love that.
And so when I talk to people about it, or I'm trying to express it to someone that hasn't been exposed to it, that's always the first word I use, rather than a component, rather than an herb, is that it just tastes really feminine and very pretty, but still like ballsy, right? Like, and then that's the thing. And then so then when I try to talk about the juxtaposition of the flavor of Freeland, like, well, it's so flowery and very beautiful and it's magical and it's feminine, but then it's like, it's really ballsy. Like, it really hits your mouth in a way, in the back of your tongue, that's like, it takes a position.
No apologies.
No apologies. It's a beautiful thing. And we've sort of, I think we're mastering ways to mix it with other things, but truth be told, I just always straight. I don't know.
Cube of ice.
Right? That's all you need. Well, let's go back a little bit. I want to hear a little bit more about Molly Troop, who's your distiller. I met her, she came to a Kate Brown event at Knightwood, a strong supporter of Governor Kate Brown, as we have been. And so I got to meet her there, and then I got to sit with her a little bit when I was out. She's so charming and lovely and just the most magical human. Tell me how you met her.
So after Corey and I had this conversation, and I'm realizing, you know, I'm going to actually do this. I knew I needed to find a distiller. I'm, you know, no science background. I'm more going to be on the business and marketing side. And so went on my quest to find the best distiller. And to me then I wasn't necessarily in search of a female distiller. I was in search of the best. Mm-hmm. And I found her in Bend. And Molly has a background in chemistry. After school, then she went to Scotland and got her master's in distilling from Harriet Watt in Scotland, and so became a real whiskey pro, and came back and did just quality control work for a year at Hood River, meaning she just tasted whiskey all day, every day, and really refined her palate, and then went to run production at Oregon Spirits in Bend, and that's where I found her. A friend introduced us, and I threw her over my shoulder and brought her to Portland.
How did you entice her to leave?
I lured her over a couple of years.
Jill,
my outstanding charm,
Jill,
Michelle.
Jill has power. That's a real thing.
You know, actually, it was finally, I went out to Bend and I showed Molly a picture of the bottle that we were going to be using.
Oh,
and I think that
bottle
really sealed the deal. She was like, oh, this gal's serious.
Yeah. The blue bottle was a game changer.
It's a game changer.
It's the shape, everything about it is beautiful. You can't toss it.
Right.
I mean, I have this feeling that we're going to end up with walls of the Freeland blue bottles.
There could be worse walls to
it's
have.
True.
Yeah.
Well, then I want to talk a little bit more about Corey too, because Corey, as you know, is also a dear friend of mine, a fourth generation cattle rancher, although I was out there a couple of weeks ago working on a regenerative ag project together, which we should talk a little bit about, because I'm not sure that everybody totally understands, but I would like to explain a little bit more about that. But we were on the farm a couple weeks ago. We spent two nights. I was with my team, and she said something to me that really stuck with me. She said, "Michelle, I'm not a cattle farmer. I'm a soil farmer." And I said, "Well, that's pretty profound to me, to watch how they're growing those grasses and how they're moving cattle around. And I would like to know, like, from a soil, from, tell me about the soil and the grain work that you guys are working on.
Well, yeah, I think it, like, Corey is has become a soil expert, and, you know, all of these things that make up regenerative agriculture, like cover cropping and crop rotation and pasture management, is all techniques to build soil. Yeah. And ultimately reverse trends of global warming even. So really thinking of grain as a part of that, you know, Corey's new crop rotation now is beef, pork, and whiskey. Perfect American diet, and also a great,
my favorite things,
a great tool for regenerative agriculture. But really thinking of, wow, what if a lot of ranchers could take this on and incorporate small grain production, and with breweries and distilleries and bakeries are all supporting them. It could be pretty revolutionary. So that's something that Corey and I have talked a lot about. And, you know, the rye that goes into this still will be one of the first, but looking at other grains too, like triticale or kernza, are really interesting grains that could also serve a lot of purposes.
I cannot wait for what's next. It's such a tall order, but it's regenerative ag is something that it's going to change. It's going to be the game changer. So I applaud you and what you guys are doing. I know we don't have a lot of time yet. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about women, of course, as our parallel lives have both morphed here. We've both started businesses that are owned and run by women. The only real question I have is how you built that community, and did you plan on it from the beginning? Tell me a little bit about it. When I went to the tasting room the other day, it was filled with beautiful women that just were such badasses. I mean, they just owned the space, but they were hospitable and they were smart and they were active. Like they just, the way they moved through the space and worked with one another and then like held their own space and their attitudes were, it was amazing. It was marvelous.
I'm so glad that was your experience.
Yeah.
I think when I was starting out with the distillery, it wasn't the intent to be all women owned and operated. Like I said, you know, I was looking for the best and I found Molly, and then I was realizing the power that story could have. Yeah. And less than 1% of distilleries are owned and operated by women. And all we know,
why
it's been
that?
Shown over and over that all industry benefits from diversity. And so that is it's a story we're going to keep telling until we are seeing some more of an even playing field. So, and I think it's really interesting that, you know, women have moral factory cells, more taste buds. Mm-hmm. Like we can actually make better booze.
We're built for this.
That's right.
That's what's
and
happening.
In fact, historically, women were the distillers. Like way back, women distilled and men
because
would actually.
Because of their palates?
Because of, well, I think it was like part of the home and men would seek out their wives based on their distilling techniques. So
when did that change?
I think as it became not just a home moonshining kind of thing, but more of a industry.
I mean, the same could be said of chefs, right? I mean, it's the same.
Absolutely.
It's the same
absolutely.
Thing.
Yes.
It's so interesting. I am a huge fan, and I'm so happy to have you as a friend. And I'm so happy that we get to do this in this town together, because I believe with all of my heart that the more stories we can tell like this, we will get to equity and a more equitable, fair playing field faster. So thank you for being on this journey with me.
Oh, my pleasure. I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather be journeying with, Michelle.
So we should drink gin tonight, right?
Indeed.
Can we do that?
As most nights.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, thank you, Jill, so much for being here. And thanks to your lovely team. Give them all my best and tell them to keep rocking it. I mean, truly amazing.
Likewise to the Nightwood gals.
Thank you. So thanks again to Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. Thanks to Aaron Parecki, co-founder of Stream PDX, for being our sound engineer today. Thank you, Jill, and thank you to all of you amazing women out there. Keep doing what you're doing. That's how we're going to change this world.
Cheers.